About holiness, because this picture, Yakir was right, this really is a picture of holiness. It's about being whole. And the way a part is a whole is, if you're a part of the whole, then you're only whole when you're a part of a whole. And so each and every one of us is really one of these people. And we're emerging. But the important thing to understand is each person is really the whole picture. Understand that. The whole picture culminates here. The whole picture culminates there. It takes all these people for this guy to emerge. And it takes all these people for this lady to emerge. So that means that every individual is actually an individual expression of the culmination of the entire picture at this point, at this point, at this point, at this point, if you get my point. Okay, so now look at holiness. Alright? Rav Kook explains like this. The ultimate goal of life is holiness. If you wanted to know what the goal of life is, here it is. Rav Kook says it straight. Right? Megamat HaKol is the Kadosh. But now he's going to tell us what holiness is. Holiness is supreme unity, which contains nothing of the weakness of morality. Now, I would change that translation to oneity. Why would I call it oneity rather than unity? Yeah. Right, exactly. Unity suggests that there are these separate parts that have been pushed together, synthesized. There isn't any separate parts. There is nothing in the universe that's separate from anything else in the universe. This is a completely whole interfaced universe. It's just our minds are breaking it into pieces. But it itself is not broken up into pieces at all. Okay? It's one flow. And so holiness is a supreme unity which contains nothing of the weakness of morality. Holiness does not fight against the self-love embedded deep within the soul of every living being. But rather it sets man in such a superior state that the more he loves himself, the more the good within him will spread over all around him, over the whole world, all of being. What's his point? And again, what's his point? Not what's your point, what would you like him to say? Read what he just said and tell me what he just said. Yeah.
Holiness brings out the inherent self-centeredness in people and uses it for good?
No. It doesn't bring out the self-centeredness. What? First of all, what's he pivoting what against what?
Holiness versus morality.
Yeah, exactly. He is comparing holiness to morality. And what is he saying is the difference between holiness and morality? Let's start with what morality is expecting of us. What is morality expecting? Yes, Andrew.
Lower yourself.
Well, he didn't use the word humble. What did he say? Morality is...
It's us against about self-love.
That's right. Morality is saying, don't be selfish. Right? You love yourself too much. Forget about yourself. Take care of other people. That's morality. Right? But holiness doesn't have to fight against that. Why? Because what does holiness want to enable you to do? Whereby morality wants you to stop loving yourself and stop being so selfish and be selfless and take care of people, holiness is telling you what?
To exalt yourself so that you love man more.
That you what do you mean? You'll demand
like
more
the
what?
The more you love yourself and the more you let like your inner essence and beauty flow, then more you'll relate better to other people.
Why? Why will you relate better to other people?
Because they also love themselves. Because you're fundamentally...
Who said they don't love themselves? A lot of people don't love themselves.
Because you're fundamentally connected to them.
Exactly. In other words, let's go back here. I'm going to tell this guy over here, he's got a shtreimel, so he's a chassidish, gerach chassid here. I'm going to say to him, I want you to love yourself. Be holy. Be completely you. Be selfish. Because if you really love yourself, you will...
Love
you will love everybody because you will find everyone within yourself. Because you realize that the true you is the culmination of everybody as it focuses at this point. And the true her is everybody where it focuses, but it culminates at this point. And so holiness is not asking you to be moral. And this is the mistake that people make. They say, why can't I be a good person? Why isn't being good good enough? What does Judaism want? You might recall, I shared with you, I had a fellow who came into my office a number of years ago. His father was a well-known politician, and his father was not alive anymore at that point. And he said, my father was the most moral man I've ever met. And I don't believe if my father was a Torah Jew, he would have been more moral. So I said, but do you think he would have been holier? And he was taken aback by that. He said, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, this is a mistake people make. They think that the goal of Torah is to be moral. The goal of Torah is not to be moral. Tell me how you know that the goal of Torah is not to be moral. It's not against being moral. You can't achieve Torah if you're not moral.
Because the Torah doesn't say, you shall be moral, it says you shall be holy.
That's true, but the Torah has all these laws that seem to be moral, but there's a basic principle that I'm sure you've all heard about, of something that precedes Torah, and that's called? Derech Eretz is morality. Derech Eretz is be a mensch. Right? If you're not moral, you won't succeed in Torah. But Torah isn't to make you moral. You really should be moral before you get to Torah. So when people say, well, isn't being good good enough? It's good, but there's something that you could achieve even more than just being good. Okay? So, the fact that somebody's moral doesn't necessarily mean that they're holy. The fact that somebody's holy, they will be moral. Okay? They will be moral. But in what sense? So I mentioned to you, there's two ways of doing tzedakah. You're walking down the street, you see these two people, you see a poor person on the street. Jack and Jill are walking down the hill, and they see this guy who needs a pail of water. Okay? And so, Jack, he gets this guy a pail of water. Jill, she runs and she gets a pail of water. But they actually didn't do the same thing. One did an act of morality, and the other one did an act of holiness. What was the difference? They both gave the guy tzedakah. What was the difference? Yeah?
One of them felt that like they just like it was the right thing to do, and the other one felt like this person's a part of me, and I want him to have this pail of water because that's what I would want.
Exactly, right? One person says, "Oh, ooh, I feel bad. Oh, I hope that doesn't happen to me. Maybe if I give him money, I'll protect myself from that fate." Or, I just feel bad I have all this money, so I feel just better that I'm giving him some of my money. You know, there's a story about a Hasidic Rebbe who gave money to a fellow on the street, and his Talmidim were with him. And then about two blocks later, he goes, "Oi, give out!" And he's just running back. And so they all start running after him. And again, he gives the guy another $5. And so the student said, "Rebbe, what was that all about?" He said, I wanted to do tzedakah. I said, "Rebbe, we just passed that guy 2 minutes ago. Why? What do you mean? You gave him $5. He said, no. The first time I gave him $5 is because I felt bad. So I wasn't really giving him anything. I was just quieting my own feelings of guilt that I have and he doesn't. But now I don't feel guilty anymore. He's got my $5. So now I can really do tzedakah and give him $5. Right? That's a level where I love you because you're part of me, and so if I saw me on the street, would I help myself? Of course I'd help myself. So if I see a part of me on the street, well, why wouldn't I help myself? But morality, that's a whole different thing. It's like, I don't really want to share my money with this complete stranger. But then again, I've been told, don't be selfish. That's not nice to be selfish. So I have to overcome my natural inclination to be selfish because I should be selfless. Rav Kook is telling us that you should be selfish. That's an amazing thing. You should be selfish. Right? Not shellfish, don't get that wrong, right? Selfish.
What? How does that connect?
Shellfish and selfish?
No. Selfish. How is being selfish holy?
Well, guys, tell Mark, what's so holy about being selfish? If you're really selfish, I mean truly, truly selfish, then what would you be? Yeah.
Because everyone's part of the greater self, so I'm being selfish here.
That's right. If this guy is really selfish, if this guy really cares about himself, then he'd care about everybody. Because he couldn't exist without them. They're a part of him. He loves them with the same love he loves himself because they're a part of him. Right? And where is God in this picture? God is the whole that's greater than the sum of the parts. He's not even the sum of the parts. He's the whole that the parts are flowing out of.
So God is like the 3D magic glasses thing.
Maybe. We have to do this class again on Purim. You know, we're all drunk. Right? So let's look at this. Remember to look at this when we're drunk. The problem is we'll be so drunk we won't know where it is. But just remember where it is. Yeah. Yeah. I actually want to do an animation of all these characters talking to each other. And then one smart Alec character starts saying, "What are we doing? We're all connected to each other." And I'll say, "You're crazy." Right? And then as they're walking away yelling, there's a picture on the wall of all of them like this. Right? Where they realize, because that's really what's going on between us all. And we think we're talking to separate, but we're really talking to ourselves. The whole time we've been talking to ourselves, the whole time we've been taking care of ourselves. Now, Rav Kook is saying this because, a very powerful point, Nietzsche's critique of religion is it's going to fail. Morality is going to fail. Why is morality going to fail?
Because it's something that was made up by the weak.
That's right. And why was it made up by the weak?
Subdue the strong.
That's right. But really, what is morality asking you to do which is unrealistic? Is to be selfless. He said, people are selfish. Right? By definition, a human being is selfish. You're asking to not be himself. You're asking to transcend himself. That's what Hitler said in Mein Kampf. The Jews are asking us to transcend ourselves. That's ridiculous. Man cannot transcend himself. But that you can transcend your ego. Ego means, I think this is me, this is you. A lot of people in between us, but there's really no connection that we share. That's ego. When you transcend your ego, you're not transcending yourself. You're actually, starts with an F.
Finding yourself.
Your real self is anchored in community. That's why you're called a medaber, right? Why are you called a medaber? I understand domem, mineral, semech, is a vegetable, chai is an animal. But why are we called a medaber? Why are we not called ish or enosh? Because we speak, we communicate to create community. And a human being that's not part of community has lost his self. That's why Jewish life is about community. You know, when I go to Minyan in the morning, do I always love davening? I don't always love davening, right? But one thing I know, I need a klal boost. I need to check in with the community. I need to remember that I'm part of a vision of a people. And that does something. That's like recharging your phone. You got to recharge back into klal consciousness. The prat only finds himself in the klal, because the prat is actually what? Not just part of the klal. He's a prati expression of the klal. Right? There isn't individual and community. There's just community and what? Listen again.
Unity.
There isn't cloud. There isn't community and individuals that are part of a community in a community. There's really just community and
holiness.
No, there's no unity because there isn't separation. That's why I don't like the word unity. No, there's really community and individual expressions of community. Right. You are actually an individual expression of all of Klal Yisrael. And you know how I know that? I've been actually worried to put this up on Facebook because I'm going to get killed. I want to do a Facebook thing called Someone's Trying to Kill Me.
Don't do it.
Right? Somebody's trying to kill me. It's a scary thing, but somebody's trying to kill you also. Right? Why? It's actually a tremendous compliment to you. Because to you, to them, you are all of Klal Yisrael. Right? They don't know you. They don't know anything about you. They don't care. Right? Because they see you as an expression of Klal Yisrael. For them to stab you is to stab at all of Am Yisrael from the beginning of Avram Avinu till Mashiach. They have that consciousness of you. Like, that's really, they don't even themselves understand it. But from their point of view, killing a random Jew, they don't even know the Jew. They just know. And that's what's unique about the Jewish people. What's unique about the Jewish people, we are very aware of ourselves as individual expressions of klal, of community. And that's where you'll find yourself, that's where you will be empowered. But as long as you just want to have your own little home, and you got, okay, you got nice kids, and you got a great car, and you're doing great vacations, but you don't live the community, you don't have the community vision inside you, you don't feel part of Am Yisrael. And quite frankly, I think there's, you know, and I'd like to actually fix that at a right time. We don't know the story well enough. You need to really know Jewish history to really understand that you're a player in this story. And if you understood how amazing this story is, you wouldn't want to be outside this story at all. And even if you try to get out the story, the Goyim will bring you right back into the story, even though I'm not part of the story. I'm not even Jewish, right? But they say you are Jewish, okay? So it's important to understand that that's what holiness is. Holiness is not asking you to fight your self-love. It's actually asking you
to love yourself.
To love yourself, but in what way? Your true self as an expression of Klal Yisrael. Okay? So that's why I wear the team shirt. Right? This is the team shirt. This is the team hat. I want to be part of the team. Okay, we can have all kinds of nice, you know, discussion about what this means, but bottom line, it's the team shirt, right? And I want to be part of the team, right? And the team puts on tefillin every morning. I want to put on tefillin. And the team, this is the team diet. I want to eat the team diet, right? And the team rests on Shabbos. I want to be part of the team because I am part of the team. There really isn't the team. There's just Klal Yisrael and different facets of Klal Yisrael. All right, so let's read a little bit. Let's start from the beginning, and then you can ask a question. The ultimate goal of life is holiness. Holiness is supreme unity, or oneity, which contains nothing of the weakness of morality. Holiness does not fight against self-love, embedded deep within the soul of every living being, but rather it sets man in such a higher state that the more he loves himself, the more the good within him, will spread over all around him, over the world, all of being. You know, one of the greatest chesed you could do for Klal Yisrael is to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, this guy says, you know what, I don't really care about myself. Right? You understand? You're going to mess up everybody. Because everybody's counting on you. Everybody needs you. Right? So if your hair is all disheveled and you're, you know, when you're out bent out of shape, everybody's going to be bent out of shape. You don't realize that what you do to yourself affects everybody, right? And person will say, that's your mitzvah, right? If I get up in the morning and go daven, it affects everybody, all of Klal Yisrael. You don't believe that because you live in this fragmented mind. These people wouldn't believe it because we're all connected. We're all interface, right? One move. And everything moves. Right. Yeah.
It seems that the pasuk we have there in Kamacha assumes that in a state of self-love, you won't love other people.
Absolutely. The more you love yourself, the more you love other people. Haftel Recha Kamacha.
Because it's commanding you.
Because it's commanding you? Oh, that's because we live under this deluded sense that we're separate. So the mitzvah is commanding you to act in a way that you would act if you were in touch with yourself. You wouldn't need a mitzvah Haftil Recha Kamocha if you were in touch with your true self as part of a greater self.
So
all mitzvahs are telling you, live this way so you will access this existential fact that never changes in reality, but forever changes in your mind. And now the question is, does your perception match what's really happening between us? We are all connected. Look at, I much mentioned this to you, I think I did. I saw an interesting piece. It was a guy named Paul Byers. He was doing research for Columbia University, and he developed something called the conversational dance. Did I ever share this with you?
No.
Okay. And what he did is he took videos of like a talk like this. You know, people listening, public speaker. And then what he did is he analyzed the video down to microseconds. And what he proved is that right this second in this room, every single person is moving in perfect synchronicity with every syllable that's coming out of my mouth. And he called it the conversational dance. Whereby you think you're sitting and you're listening and I'm talking. But no, that's not true. What comes out of my mouth and what I think about is very much impacted by your movement and my movement, and we're all moving like a sea. And every wave is affecting all the other waves. And so you don't understand, when I come into a class and somebody's actually looking at their email or somebody comes in, you know, late, you don't understand. It really affects me, not because of my ego or something like that. Right? It's because it's a rhythm that happens when you have a really amazing class and suddenly everybody is jamming, even if you're not saying something. There's an interface of mind, right? And something really happens, right? That's why, as I mentioned, that was Cheder Choshev, that dark room where people are singing together. It's a powerful experience where you start to see that it's not me singing, it's not you singing. You start to experience the whole room is singing through you in a unique way, and yet the whole room is singing through him in a unique way. And that's why people love to watch choirs or be part of an a cappella group or whatever it is, because you're actually trying to reconnect to this deep sense that we're all really facets of oneself. Right? We really are. And therefore, Rav Kook is giving you a very deep idea. Asher kidishan of mitzvotav. Every mitzvah is to enable you to accomplish holiness. And what now does it mean to accomplish holiness? Profound self-love, which empowers you and inspires you to bring good to everyone. Because how could you not? They're all part of you and you're a part of them. You get this? It's a very powerful picture. I couldn't explain it anywhere like this without thanks to Mr. Escher over here. Yeah, I'm really happy he was doing those drugs. Yeah.
Two quick questions, or maybe not quick, depending. One is, does this oneity, that's the word we use, right? Oneity?
It's my word, I've got a trademark on it, too.
Okay. I don't know how much I know you about.
We have to pay every time we use it.
Yeah, every time you use oneity.
It's okay, because if we pay you, we're really paying ourselves.
Exactly. That's exactly. I'm only trying to get you guys to be selfish.
Does this oneity extend beyond simply Klal Yisrael?
Yes.
Completely Olam Hazeh?
Yes. So but we are the cutting edge of a movement of Klaliyut, of oneity.
Right, so why are there mitzvot that are directed strictly to Jews, such as Lashon Hara, it's a vera to speak about another Jew, but it's not actually a vera to speak about another Jew.
Okay, because Judaism is a good question. Judaism is very practical. We can't get everybody to love everybody. Let's first work on loving a Jew, right? And live up to that high level of consideration. And then once we get there, that'll flow to the rest of the world. But you got to be realistic in terms of, like, you know, love everybody everywhere, every time, no matter what. Let's start here with our family, which, you know, it's much harder to love family members sometimes than strangers. So if you can succeed in bringing peace in the land of Israel amongst ourselves, then we can then bring peace to the world. Right. Yeah.
But I think with the specific case of Lashon Hara, it's not...
so difficult to extrapolate the idea of not speaking bad about people.
What are you talking about? How many people are actually keeping Lashon Hara amongst themselves?
Is it impractical to... Because
now, first of all, it doesn't say go ahead and speak Lashon Hara, right? Midas Chassidus, you shouldn't be speaking Lashon Hara against any human being, right?
Okay.
But down bottom line halacha, this is your bottom line requirement. But not like, so, you know, get your Lashon Hara hit by talking about Tony next door. You know, a truly Jewish person who loves Judaism won't be talking Lashon Hara about anybody. In fact, they won't even be saying negative things. Right, they'll just stop talking negative language about anyone, anything, even food. You won't say this food stinks, right? I mean,
right,
there's never an opportunity to write there,
but
I'm talking about
the
other yeshivas.
But then when you don't say the food's great, people know it stinks.
Well, look, just choke on it and enjoy it. all right, let's read on. The nature of a social group by no means contains the possibility of the inclination of weakening self-love. It holds only moral destruction if the chance comes an internal decay, all-consuming. Now he's making a new point here. The nature of a social group by no means contains the possibility of the weakening of self-love. You can't create a moral nation, right? In other words, Rav Kook is going to agree that really, sometimes to get to holiness, you have to be moral, right? Meaning, you'll have to beat self-love, which is really ego-love, which is really deluded self-love, to get to true self-love, which is a love that includes everybody. Fine. But you can't do that with a nation. A nation, you can't expect the nation to be moral. You have to go straight to the holiness with a nation. Because a nation has to love itself. You can't even take a risk of it not loving itself. And therefore, we're called an Am Kadosh. We're not called an Am Musar. We're an Am Kadosh, right? So there is something called Musar. Musar is really morality. Musar comes from the word. Where does the word Musar come from?
Musara.
Yeah, but there's another word that the word Musar.
Musar.
It comes from Lasor, which means to imprison, right? An Asir. Is a prisoner. Asur means something's forbidden, means that you have to restrain yourself. Musar is morality. Morality is asking you to overcome something, to rein in on yourself. Right? And that's because of your small-minded self, which sees it as separate from everybody else. And so you have to beat that kind of selfishness in order to achieve a higher selfishness, which you want to not beat, but celebrate and embrace, which is the selfishness that includes everybody. Okay? And so, but when it, so that's what Musar is. Musar is actually morality. And we do need Musar. You know, to jump straight to Kadosh, which is not easy because we're not so in touch with our true self. So we have to rein in on our ego, or rein in our deluded sense of self, our deluded selfishness, to be selfless, to ultimately achieve true selfishness, which is inclusive of everybody. But now look at the next line. Thus it is completely impossible to demand there be a moral nation in the world, but only a holy nation. As it strengthens itself, as it rises in internal and external value, so will the light and good in the world rise and strengthen. You know what's so interesting about Jewish people? They're very uncomfortable with the chosen people idea. Jews, I find, are very disturbed by the chosen. We're not really chosen. No. We're choosy people. We're not chosen people. Well, why? Why is that a problem for you? Right? But, you know, because there's lots of groups that have said they're the chosen. There's lots of religions and lots of teams and football. You know, I remember I was at a concert, and suddenly, it was a concert hall that was in a circle, and the stage rotated. So there were all these sections. And suddenly I saw across the hall, this entire section get up and starts yelling, "We're number one! We're number one!" Right? And then this other section got up and says, "No, we're number one! We're number one!" And everyone was jumping up and down, screaming, "We're number one!" Right? And I said, "I'm not getting part of this." You know, my whole section got up. There was no one singing. I'm not number one. But I was uncomfortable with, "I'm number one. Who am I to say I'm number one? I love everybody. Everybody should be number one, right?" But that's kind of like a Jewish thing, that the reason why we can be chosen, because we're very uncomfortable with it. We're actually very uncomfortable with being the chosen people. That's a good reason to be chosen, because that's not dangerous. It's very dangerous for people that want to be chosen, want to be number one, at the expense of everybody else being number two, being the winner, at the expense of everybody else being the loser. But the truth is that we ultimately want everybody to be number one, right? We want everybody to eventually realize Hashem chose them and for whatever they've been chosen to do. So to try and get a nation not to feel chosen and really feel great about themselves, right? That's not the way to deal with, you know, nationhood. Yeah, Andrew.
So I think my question is about like the Bnei Israel, like with Naaseh and Nishma, like they seem pretty willing to be chosen, but definitely I think that with regards to Moshe, I think it works nicely because he was really, you know, like oh me, like who am I?
That's right.
But just with Bnei Israel,
but you have to stand. That took a lot of slavery for hundreds of years to get to a place where you so don't take it in an egotistical way because your ego's being smashed. Right, your ego's being smashed. Right, that's what's interesting about this parsha, is the evolution of a nation that emerges out of slavery. The first person that calls them a nation is Pharaoh. They're shocked. We're a nation. Who said we're not a nation? We're just a family. We're just, you know, we just like to eat matzo balls. we don't have weapons. We have no political, you know, influence here. Why does he call them a nation? So that's for another time. But I want you to understand that this idea of Jewish pride is a good thing. And we find that the best of essence of morality is already there in holiness, in the most splendid form, full of beauty and light. In other words, morality will be a subset of holiness. If you love yourself, but your true self, because your true self is an individual expression of the collective, then you'll love everybody. And it'll come out of you naturally. It'll come out of you in a very natural way. Alright? You know, it's interesting. Most people think that the opposite of happiness is sadness. But in our tradition, the opposite of happiness is ego. Gaava. Why? What's gaava got to do with happiness? Right? Or non-happiness. So people think there's happy and sad. No, sad is just a symptom of gava. Gava causes you to be sad. Haughtiness causes you to be sad. Why? Yeah.
You don't feel happy when you feel a connection with others.
What?
You don't feel happy when you feel a connection with others, and when you're haughty, you
feel... Exactly. No, I was right on. Exactly. When do you feel happy? When you're yourself. Right? When you are you, you feel happy. And if you're not feeling happy, it's because somehow you don't feel you're being you. You somehow sense there's a you that you haven't yet succeeded in living. Right? As I mentioned, what drives us all is I am. That's the sweetest two words in our lives. I am. You know? And yet, if the true I am is rooted in a collective, then I can't fully say I am because I haven't found my real sense of I am-ness. Because your true I am, for this guy to say I am, he has to include we are. And if his I am isn't part of a we are, he doesn't feel like an I am. Doesn't feel like an I am. That's why community is so important. That's why minyan is so important, right? Because you get that klal boost every morning or three times a day. Klal, we're living our dream together. We're dreaming together. That's what we're doing. What is the Shemona Esrei? I've talked to you about it. It's Hashem's prayer. It's Hashem's vision for us. And we are practicing an exercise of visionary thinking. The Chazan, which is Chazon. He's the master. The Chazan is leading us in this exercise of visioning our shared future, our shared destiny. Right? And,
So, a lot of people define, or have heard you define, separation.
Yes.
Is wrong?
No, it's a misunderstanding. You know, what is, you know, when Rashi defines Kadosh as Prushim, and Prushim, you know, could be understood, or Nivdalim, and it's connected to sexuality, that one of the, you know, prime examples of being Kadosh is somebody who is Nivdal, as separate from sexual perversion.
Also,
what's it got to do with it? I put on my tefillin, what's it got to do with sexuality?
Also,
what?
You use the word kadesha to describe a prostitute.
Yes. Right. Well, the question is why she called it kadesha, and I'll explain that in a second. You have to stand. A better translation of the word kadosh would not be separate, but transcendent. There's a big difference between separate and transcendent. Okay? If I am transcendent, then that means I am connecting to a whole that is beyond the particular. Okay? We talked about alcohol. Okay? You have a person that is an alcoholic. Right? So he stops drinking. Did he transcend alcohol, or did he separate himself from alcohol? He separated himself from alcohol. If he were to transcend alcohol, what would that mean? He could drink alcohol and not become trapped. So he's so beyond alcohol, he can include it. Right? But a person who can't get beyond alcohol has got to cut it out of their life. But it's still theoretically in their life. Right? And they're just staying away from it. Now, again, I'm saying that with the greatest respect for the challenge of that, and the fact that a person can even do that is really amazing. That's not my point over here. My point is holiness means that I'm so beyond ego, I'm so beyond taivas, that I can now include them. And on Shabbos, I can actually overeat. Not only can I overeat, I have a mitzvah to overeat on Shabbos. Right? That's onig Shabbos. Why? Because as long as I don't become trapped and addicted to the food, but I'm enjoying the food. So Judaism is not about being ascetic and leaving the physical world. It's about being so beyond the physical world, you can be in it and beyond it at the same time. That's what holiness is. You're now a whole person. Right? A whole person is a person that can enjoy this world without becoming addicted to this world. That's a whole person. Okay? And why is sexuality so identified with Kadosh? Because that's precisely the thing that people are addicted to. That's the most common addiction, is that. Okay? So if you can be beyond that, but we all know that in Jewish tradition, the sage is married. The sage, the priest is not someone who's in a monastery separate from women and separate from wine. Right? If anything, Shabbos is all about wine. Right? Except at Arata. Okay. It's grape juice at Arata. Yes.
So why is like a nazir, which is like so like intense, you can't like have wine?
No. Actually, the nazir has to bring a carbon for his sin. He actually did a little bit of a sin by being a nazir. It was complimentary because he realized that he needed to do this, just like an alcoholic understands, like, I have to vow myself away from alcohol. But it's not the ideal.
Well,
it's not the idea.
Argue that the reason he's bringing a korban is because he's reverting back from his
rabban says
that.
Yeah, but some explain that there was a little bit of a sin there that he did that. Again, it was a good, so to speak, sin. Let's go on a little bit more. Here, Rav Kook, number 2. The great thought of the oneness of being eliminates the question of love itself. The question considered by some is the root of sin, and by others is the basis of morality. There's only love of all, which is truly self-love, enlightened and sublime. False self-love, which loves the small spark, visible to the bleary eyes, and hates the clarifying selfhood, and this is blindness. as foolish as it is wicked. So we'll do more of that next week, but let's look at here. Going back to here. He says that the great thought of oneness eliminates the question of love. Love seems to be great, and yet love seems to bring a lot of heartache and a lot of terrible things. He says some people consider the question of love as the root of sin, and others consider it as the basis of love, as the basis of morality, right? Have to love people. On the other hand, because you love certain people, you don't love other people. So love seems to be a double-edged sword. So he says, no, that's because there is only one love. If you tap into real love, then real love is truly self-love. Okay? False self-love. What is false self-love? What? But what's false about false self-love?
Not your true self.
What's not your true self? What are you loving in false self love?
You are thinking yourself into thinking your ego is yourself.
Exactly. You are loving your ego. You are loving the deluded sense of self that is separate from and self-contained and exists independent of everybody else. Right? You are stuck in your skin. Right? And you think that you live in a sack of skin, and that this skin separates you from everybody else. But this is not where we're separated. This is actually the seam where we're all connected. Right? Right. And so that's the mistake, is how we perceive it all. Okay? How we perceive it all. In other words, if I drew a circle on that board, what could it be?
A circle.
What else could it be?
A very simplified apple.
It could be an apple. What else could it be? A globe. What else could it be? A ball. What else could it be? What? Ah, you hear what Ezra said? Most people won't say a hole. Most people see the borders as holding in the inside and cutting it off from the rest. Right? That was your mind. So you think of a ball, you think of a coin, right? But Ezra, because he's a madrich, he thought of a hole. Because he understood that maybe the parameter is where it joins the rest of the picture, rather where it separates itself from the rest of the picture. So it's all the way you see your body. You're looking at your body as actually holding in the context of you, rather than maybe this is actually, maybe we're all cutouts in a picture, you know, on a Bristol board. Anyways, pass this back, and we will continue next week.